Suri Surrender seems to go nonstop. He teaches, lectures, and has been involved in upper management in companies like Verizon, Pfizer, and Capital One. He's also head of advisory services at the Alpha Institute of Executive Education at the University of Arkansas. And he's helped develop a scientific way to measure good leadership. This spring, when organizers put together a TEDx session in Fayetteville, Suri was among those asked to deliver an address. He chose to talk about leadership during his 18 minutes. I asked him about that when he visited the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. And I also asked him about the Alpha Institute at the U of A.
An Alpha Institute is all about ideas in a specific space. And that space happens to be the space of global leadership, the space of diversity and inclusion, and the space of women's leadership. And it is essentially a think tank fueled by the thinking of corporate warriors like myself, long pedigree at Verizon, McKinsey, Capital One, and the intellectual and academic rigor of the University of Arkansas. It's a blend, it's a marriage of those two unique elements. And what we produce then is consulting services, training services, and a lot of original research on the topics that I just mentioned.
A couple of the three tent poles that you mentioned for the Alpha Institute include the word leadership. Not that easy to define what it is it?
It really isn't. And I remember somebody that said this to me earlier today, that leadership is, you don't know exactly what it is until you see it, and then you're able to figure out what it is. In many ways, there are thousands of books written about leadership, so many articles, so many people who speak on it, but there is still not a common definition of leadership. The one definition that seems to work, though, from my perspective, is when you're leading, you are leading somebody. It's a set of people. It is not processes, it's not events, it's not projects. Leadership essentially involves leading people. And then when you start with that assumption, you're leading them from point A to point B. So you're leading them from somewhere to somewhere else. And then at the end of it, obviously you're leading to deliver outcomes and deliver results for the people you're leading, for the customers you're serving. And so that, to me, is probably the best working definition of leadership that I've come up with. And if you accept that, it has certain implications that automatically follow that definition.
Is leadership a conscious, a 100% conscious sort of exercise? While you're leading, you're thinking about how you're leading?
It could be but in many cases I think people lead instinctively, and leadership shows through in sometimes very simple banal acts in the course of a day, but those acts add up to having a profound impact on the people who experience the leadership and on the environment around the leader. So I would say it's probably a mix of conscious strategies, techniques, and approaches that people use that they have learned in the course of their working life or in school, and some unconscious sort of mindsets and approaches that they have.
Yeah, there's the old cliche, born leader.
Yes.
Do you buy that?
I think that you might be born with a predilection for leadership and a bias towards leadership. I do believe there's an element of genetics to it. But I also believe that leadership can be developed as a result of your experiences, as a result of your openness to learning and watching people around you. That basic predisposition can either flower and grow, or potentially, be stunted. And so I think it's, again, as with most things, it's probably a combination of nature and nurture.
You have a leadership quotient.
Yes, that's exactly right. Very similar to the intelligence quotient that all of us are familiar with, and the emotional quotient, which Dan Goldman really wrote about for a while. My belief is that the effectiveness with which people lead can be measured objectively, systematically, and sustainably over the leader's life. And the rest of the talk is really about how that, what the construct of the leadership quotient and how that breaks down into its component parts.
So you could, not to make this like baseball or something, but you could look at a leader's career or life and break down how good she or he was, or...
Yes, we have done that, actually, and we've done that with many leaders in the corporate arena where we have been able, with a valid instrument, been able to measure their leadership quotient. And that is the sort of the interesting part about the talk is how do you measure that? Mm-hmm. What is the way? Because there are so many different ways of looking at leadership. We feel that we have arrived at three mutually exclusive but collectively exhaustive components of leadership that can be measured.
What's one of them?
Well, to really get to what the components are, the question that I would ask listeners to think about is, how do the great leaders lead? What is the fundamental principle that they use that distinguishes great leaders in their lives from ones that may not be so memorable? And most of the time when we asked that question, we got the same answer. Now, the answers were phrased differently, but they coalesced around three things. The first thing people mentioned is that great leaders had somehow figured out a way to get them to want to follow them. It wasn't as much about leading as it was about getting voluntary followership. Mm-hmm. That's a fundamental secret that we started with on this journey of leadership, because then obviously that begs the next question. How do people, get that voluntary followership?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so when we stopped and looked at that, again, the answers that came back came around three broad directions. One is people said that the great leaders found a way to earn the currency of credibility from them as followers by demonstrating distinctive and consistent results.
Consistent,
yes. Because if it's not consistent, then it could be incidental, not intentional. Great leaders deliver distinctive, consistent results for all their constituencies. And as a result of that, they earn the currency of credibility. So I posed the question, if you had a leader who, if you followed them, you consistently got the results that you were looking for, wouldn't it make perfect sense to follow them? You would want to follow them. They would never have to force you. And so that's the first currency. The second currency that people talked to us about was that great leaders earned the currency of trust by building dependable, caring relationships with them. And so, again, if you stop and think about this, if you had a leader that you knew was unbiased, that didn't have an agenda of their own, and whose agenda was your welfare, wouldn't you want to follow them? Because you believed in them, you trusted them. And so that's number two. The third currency that people said was that great leaders earned the currency of respect by demonstrating superior, relevant resources. And by resources, we thought, what kind of resources? Is it wealth? Is it power? Is it the size of the organization? And what people came back and said, no, it's resources that are intellectual resources. Great leaders are smart about their space. And so those are the three currencies of influence that we talk about that motivates voluntary followership.
Is there a connection whether your leadership is, whether you're Gandhi or Dr. King, whether you're leading a division at a Fortune 500 company, or whether you're trying to teach students something? Is there an underlying, because those are three different levels.
Yes, there is an underlying commonality in all of those situations, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a political leader like Gandhi was, or a corporate leader. These currencies of influence apply to all of those. So imagine yourself as a teacher in the classroom. If the students in the class trust the teacher because they believe they have a close relationship with them, if they respect the teacher for what the teacher knows, okay, and if the teacher is able to bring to the students the results they're looking for, chances are the students are going to be more open to learning and the teacher is going to be more effective. Same thing with Gandhi. If Gandhi hadn't delivered through nonviolence the result of freedom for India, would he have been acknowledged as a great leader? Right. You know, so stop and think about it. And so same thing with the trust and the respect. People in India still look upon him as a Mahatma. And part of the reason for that is there was a tremendous respect for his intellect and a lot of trust in terms of his character. And so that is the final piece of the puzzle that I say the currencies of influence are credibility, trust, and respect. The assets of impact that deliver those currencies are results, relationships, and resources. And then the way you develop those assets of impact is by making investments of intention. How do you get results? By investing in building capabilities. Relationships, by investing in building character. And then finally, resources, by investing in building competence. So those are sort of the three layers of the model.
Suri Surrender is Head of Advisory Services at the Alpha Institute of Executive Education at the University of Arkansas. He's also helped develop a scientific way to measure good leadership. I talked to him inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio earlier this year.